Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Holiday trying to cross over his man. Wiggins dropped the ball, picked it up, releases out to Davis, front court left. Reset to Holiday. Holiday drives, draws three defenders. Lob to the rim. Alley-oop dunk. Two-hand finish for Anthony Davis.
I'll tell you what, that's a way to drown out some booze right there.
Good morning and welcome to this Thursday edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Got a tremendous show lined up for you today. But as we get closer to the NBA draft, we're just a little bit more than a week away, ladies and gentlemen. Will our long nightmare of Anthony Davis drama finally be coming to an end? Could it? Will it? We need to pray on it. We need to do whatever you can, even if you're not a basketball fan, just for the sake of the state of Louisiana sports scene and our brothers and sisters in New Orleans. Let's pray that this will come to an end by draft night.
Speak it, believe it, receive it. Speak it, believe it, receive it.
Speak it, believe it. Yes, yes, yes. Please.
Speak it, believe it, receive it. Speak it, believe it, receive it.
Can we?
It's Deontay Wilder, by the way, so it's a tough you-know-what saying that. So it's got to be true.
If we got Deontay in our corner.
Right, it's got to be true.
We're going to make this happen. Please, can we make it happen? The AD trade drama. And the crazy thing about this is that this has not really gone away. This has not subsided since he made the request to be traded back during the regular season. And everything that's happened since then. The trade. Think about this. This is what's occurred in the time since Anthony Davis, the franchise player for the New Orleans Pelicans, the face of basketball in the city and the state, made his trade request through his agent, Rich Ball. The trade to the Los Angeles Lakers is botched a dozen ways from Tuesday. Anthony Davis becomes a villain. The social media team for the New Orleans Pelicans throws shade at him. The fans boo him. The NBA and the Pelicans are forced to allow Anthony Davis to play despite the fact that he does not want to be there and he has his time regulated. Dell Demps is fired. Magic Johnson, who held the similar role for the Los Angeles Lakers, unexpectedly quits without even telling his bosses. He just holds a press conference and says, I'm out. I just want to tweet about other NBA players, and I'd rather do that and just be Magic than deal with this nonsense. The Pels hired David Griffin. world champion for an office man from the Cleveland Cavaliers. He is assembling an A team around him. Langdon as his general manager. One of the most heralded, respected training staff leaders in the association. Poaches them away from Phoenix. Hires a former WNBA star to the front office. Making moves left and right. And yet here we are. It is June, Cody. And all the reports coming out are what? That the team that is the leader in the clubhouse to receive Anthony Davis via a trade from the New Orleans Pelicans as it stands right now in June is
the Lake Show, baby!
It's La La Land. After all of this nonsense, after all these people have quit, after all these people have been fired, the damage alone, the collateral damage from that trade request.
Don't forget about the alleged dinner meeting between Heath Ledger and Kobe Bryant as well. You can throw that into the mix for the Lakers as well. Never forget, Kobe Bryant had dinner with Heath Ledger after The Dark Knight came out. That's a thing.
Rob Palenka. How did the Rock just not give him the people's elbow?
Right there.
I don't understand.
Layeth the smackdown on your candy ass, Rob Palenka. Sorry, I just didn't want you to forget. I feel like that's an important point as well to this dumpster fire.
That's a very valid point and one that needs to be reiterated.
And yet, Hugh Freeze said a dumb thing one time too. We'll just say that as well.
Oh, Hugh. But yet here we are again. It is June, and we are still talking about the Lakers doing what they can for Anthony Davis's services. It's just crazy how this is working out. Oh, not to mention that Rich Paul apparently offered a Lakers assistant job to a head coach.
And didn't yesterday Rich Paul, in an interview with Sports Illustrated, didn't we see that? He said that it's Dell Demp's fault that all this trade stuff got leaked.
Of course he throws Dell Demp under the bus.
Dude's already been fired. He's the one who did it. Don't be mad at me.
He leaked all that information, not us. No. Because we got things rolling in the right direction with the Los Angeles Lakers. They're not an absolute rolling dumpster fire.
But because Dell Demps would like another job, would like to be hired somewhere else in the association, he can't just run to Sports Illustrated and sit down and have this, you know, hash it out conversation that they can write about, because he'll never get hired if he does that, not in the NBA. But Rich Paul, on the other hand, who's just in the business of making his clients and himself money, he can sit down and talk to anybody he wants and say anything he wants, and some of it's really hard to dispute or say it isn't true, whether or not it is. I mean, maybe it is Dell Demps' fault. Maybe he is the one sending out
Dell Demps
emails,
was incompetent.
But
and that's what makes this difficult, right? Because every step along the way, Dell Demps proved that he was not the man for that job and was incompetent.
Right.
Okay. So it's hard not to place the blame on someone who has a longstanding history of being incompetent in their position. But our man Rich Paul is making it, you know, I don't trust a word that comes out of anyone involved with the Los Angeles Lakers organization, because they seem to be, as an old-fashioned term, a pack of liars. Davis requested the trade from the Pels on January 28th, Cody. It is June, and we're still talking about him going to the Lakers. It's an odd scenario. So who's going to get the 26-year-old big man? Things were lit up yesterday afternoon when Woj, the Woj Bomb himself from the four-letter network, announced that the Lakers and the Celtics are the two teams that are leaders in the clubhouse that are trying to put packages together to get Anthony Davis. Now, mind you, this is in spite, apparently the Celtics are not deterred, because even though Anthony Davis or his people have said it would just simply be a one-year deal, including Rich Paul has said that, his agent, that they're still going to go after him. This is what Woj had to say so far. Boston has been undeterred in pursuing Davis despite his agent insisting AD would be a 2020 flight risk in free agency. For Boston, Davis could still be its best case to keep Kyrie Irving. To keep Kyrie? Here's the latest rumors on Davis around the NBA. You just have to laugh at all this. The Lakers have made Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, and the number 4 overall pick in next week's draft available in talks with the Pelicans. The Pels, meanwhile, hope to assemble a 3 teams or more deal for more before surrendering Davis in a trade. So that package of Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, and the number 4 pick does not do it for David Griffin.
Thank God. You keep Lonzo Ball away from my basketball team. Not even Lonzo. Keep LaVar Ball away from my basketball team.
I have no problem with Lonzo. Yeah. I know he has a terrible shot and he can't shoot the three. I got no problem with him. He has some good skills as a point guard.
Keep his old man away.
But you have to deal with his father. So
stay
no.
In your lane.
No. Send him to Utah or something.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, that would be great. Because that would be a train wreck. The Pelicans apparently want Kyle Kuzma as part of the trade package with the Lakers for Davis. But the Lakers do not want to trade Kyle Kuzma. That's the player besides LeBron James that the Lakers want to hold on to is LeBron and Kyle Kuzma. They are willing to give up Brandon Ingram. I actually think has talent and could be developed. Lonzo Ball, picks. They'd be willing to give all that up. But they want to hold on to Kyle Kuzma, which is interesting. Now, something else that's going on that's been reported yesterday. So, not only do the Lakers want to keep Kyle Kuzma, but apparently David Griffin in the front office want Kyle Kuzma as part of the package. There's also other reports that the Pelicans want another round pick. Like, not only do they want the number 4 pick this year, but they want another first rounder the next year, which I agree with. The Lakers and Celtics are also trying to negotiate independent deals with the Pelicans for Davis. But I've also seen this, and this has been reported on as well, that both the Lakers, in particular the Lakers, are trying to see what they can do with that number 4 pick. Maybe trade it to another team to get a player or another pick in return to be able to make the 3-team deal even better for the Pels. I feel like this is going to get done. I think it's going to get done before the draft. If not, it'll occur hours before next week's NBA draft. Because the Pels are taking Zion Williamson, but they need some picks, and they need some other players. Now, we'll dive into, does Boston or LA give them the best assets? Boston gives them the best young players right now. They have the better players. Jason Tatum is a better version of Kyle Kuzma. But Boston doesn't have those high picks. So that's what it's going to boil down to for the Pelicans. And David Griffin is, what does he want more? Does he want young players and more picks, or does he want better young players and fewer picks, or later in first round picks? We'll dive more into the Anthony Davis trade drama right here at RP3 and Company when we come back after this break on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to give us a call today, feel free. Pick up the phone. ARCO Equipment Hotline 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We led off today's show talking about the Anthony Davis trade drama. Woj bomb yesterday lit up the rumors, the trade talks. Once again, here we are in June. Anthony Davis made the trade request via his agent Rich Paul at the end of January. We're at the beginning of June, and yet we're still talking about Anthony Davis headed to Los Angeles to play for the Lakers. A little further discussion here about this. Once again, Rich Paul, Davis's agent with Clutch Sports, has indicated both publicly and privately to the Celtics that Davis would leave Boston in free agency in 2020, essentially becoming a one-year rental for the Celtics. That has not deterred the Celtics for trying to put together a package to trade for Anthony Davis. Reports are that they believe that bringing in Anthony Davis is their best way of re-signing Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, who opted out of his contract and has signed with Roc Nation, that's Jay-Z's firm. Okay? Now, figure where out where that's going to go. This is where the Kevin Durant injury plays a huge role. Because a lot of the rumors coming out, swirling around, is that Kyrie Irving wanted to team up with Kevin Durant, form a twosome somewhere, get a third, create a big three somewhere, whether that was with the Knicks or the Nets. Kevin Durant ain't playing for anybody next year, not until the playoffs, and that's a best-case scenario. He's likely going to do his player option, stay in Golden State, get paid, and recover. So that leaves Kyrie without another guy to roll with. So there's a lot of dominoes that could fall here. The Kevin Durant injury is trying to change the landscape when it comes to free agency and the trade of Anthony Davis. Because now Boston believes if they get Anthony Davis, they can convince Kyrie Irving to come back and they can make a run at the NBA championship. The problem for the Celtics is this. They could give two young players. Definitely Jason Tatum has to come back in that deal, right? That's number one. I'll take Marcus Smart as well to play point guard for the Pels. But they don't have a high pick. They can trade the number 14 overall pick in next week's draft. Is that going to be a difference maker for the Pels? Is that enough? Getting Jason Tatum, a guy who appears to have the ceiling of becoming an all-star wing player in this league, and a reliable point guard. You could have Marcus Smart at the one. You can let Drew Holiday at his more natural position at the two spot. You have Tatum out on the wing, Zion down low. That's a pretty damn good starting four, right? You still need to make some moves. You still need to be aggressive in free agency. Maybe that number 14 overall pick can turn into something. I would definitely get another draft pick out of Boston. Is Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, and two first-round draft picks, is that enough for Anthony Davis? Probably not. You're talking about a multiple all-NBA selection, all-defensive selection, multiple all-star. Some believe a generational talent. One who can't stay healthy for a whole season, but still a generational talent. So the likelihood of you getting anything that's comparable, the sum of all its parts that is comparable to that, the likelihood is low. Where Boston could maybe wheel and deal here, what if they trade with another team? What if they ship off Terry Rozier and maybe Al Horford to someone else and one of those picks, maybe that number 14 pick with those players and get a higher lottery pick in return? And maybe another player, and then they can ship those off to the Pels as well to package with Tatum and everything like that. There's multiple things here that can happen. The longer this goes on, because both the Lakers and the Celtics have deficiencies in what we believe to be their trade proposals for Anthony Davis. There's holes in both of them. They're not lock-down proposals by any stretch of the imagination. David Griffin is not going to settle. That's not his style. Not going to happen. So I feel like there's going to be a third team involved here, which is, makes things far more complex. It's not easy to digest that information. But you're going to get at least two players in this deal, the Pels are. You're going to get two young players. You're going to get probably picks. But if I'm the Pels, I want a third player. Could this third team be part of this? Could they move pieces around? And I'll throw something else out there for you to think about. David Griffin, once upon a time, traded for a guy with a similar skill set of Anthony Davis, maybe not as dynamic, but a perennial all-star that helped win a championship in Cleveland. His name's Kevin Love. I'm just throwing it out there. Could they swing some type of deal where they get Kevin Love? Make that three-team trade involve the Cleveland Cavaliers? I don't know. But I don't think David Griffin is going to be done with whatever he does with Anthony Davis. There's going to be some other moves. So what if you have Zion Williamson and Kevin Love out there and Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart and Drew Holiday? You get excited about that team, wouldn't you? You should. Something's going to happen here. Celtics and Lakers are the leaders in the clubhouse, but that does not mean that that's where he's going to end up. The Clippers and the Nets are still in the mix as well. And with both the Lakers and the Celtics needing a third team, by all reports, to make this a sweeter trade proposal to the Pelicans, that opens up the door for these other teams. Especially if the Celtics or the Lakers want to try to play hardball and try to bluff their way into getting, not having to give up as much for AD, because David Griffin isn't going to bite on that. His history suggests that that's not going to happen. So we'll see. We're about a week out from the NBA draft. Anthony Davis dominating the conversation yet once again. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll welcome on our good friend John Marques from the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. We'll get his insight about the Anthony Davis drama as well, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to welcome on our first guest. He joins us every Thursday. He is the award-winning columnist for the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. It's our good friend, John Marques. John, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Doing well, Ray. Doing well. How about you?
Doing great. It's a terrific time of the year. The Stanley Cup wrapped up last night. We got NBA Finals Game 6 tonight. The U.S. Open begins today. But yet, everything is put on the back burner and pushed aside because of your boy, Anthony Davis. Here we are. He made the trade request back in January, John. Here we are in June, and yet it still appears that the Lakers are the clubhouse favorites to trade for Anthony Davis. How crazy is that, that that's where we're at right now?
It may be, but you know, if you compare what they may get now compared to what was being offered back in February, it's a lot more enticing. You know, and I do think if that Anthony Davis ends up on the Lakers for, you know, for the coming basketball season, that you will probably see another team involved in the trade, which just adds more to the intrigue. I just don't know if the Lakers have enough assets with their current roster to swing the trade. Now, the interesting thing in all of this is I can make the case that what happened to Kevin Durant on, Monday night? Or was it Tuesday night? I can't remember. But what happened to him makes Anthony Davis even more valuable, because now you've taken out what was going to be the marquee free agent. You know, does Kevin Durant now opt out of his contract with Golden State, knowing he's got a full year of rehab ahead of him? So, you know, it just throws so much more intrigue into everything. And believe it or not, to me, it just further strengthens the Pelicans' hand when they go to trade him.
We're talking with John Marques of the Town Talk on the TownTalk.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. John, I agree with your point because a lot of that, which Kevin Durant was supposed to be allegedly pairing up with Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving's now opted out of his.
They were headed to New York.
They were going to head to New York or Brooklyn. So that's now going to be put on hold. You don't know what's going to happen there, and you're right. This actually helps the Pelicans because now they're going to force the Lakers or the Celtics to get a third team involved to get another asset. I think of the two proposals, you know, the thing that that floated out there, apparently the Lakers have offered up the number 4 pick, Lonzo Ball, and Brandon Ingram. They want to hold on to Kyle Kuzma, and yet the Pels want Kyle Kuzma from some reports. Are you surprised by that?
You know, you just don't know what's going on. And, you know, as dysfunctional as the Pelicans were back in January, who would have believed that the Lakers were even more dysfunctional? And it looks like they're still nobody's sure who's running the show out in Los Angeles. So I don't, you know, you just don't know what's going on in Los Angeles. But the thing to watch for is how many years now have the New York Knicks been pointing towards, hey, we've got all this cap space now. We can sign 2 or 3 marquee free agents. And, we've heard since January, it's a done deal. KD's going to the Knicks, and he's going to bring Kyrie with him. And all of a sudden, he's hurt. I mean, if you're the Knicks, I mean, do you have to swing for the fences and maybe throw in some assets that you didn't want to just to get Anthony Davis and save face? Because let's face it, if Anthony Davis goes to New York, Kyrie Irving's probably going to end up there with him as well. So, like I said, if you're the Pelicans, I mean, you know, it's still hard for me to believe everything that has gone right in the Pelicans' favor ever since the season ended. I mean, I'm just stunned because they're not used to that. They would be the ones dealing with the major injury issues or the dysfunction in the front office. And now it's like, all right, they know what they're doing and everything's lining up for them. So, but I do expect, though, a trade to happen before the NBA draft because, as someone pointed out, if they make the trade, they get some more draft picks coming in, which you figure are going to be top 5. Then they can bring in more prospects because everybody knows they're going to take Zion Williams. So if you're Jay Moran or R.J. Barrett or somebody else, why are you going to come to New Orleans to work out for them? So I do expect them to maybe make a trade. You know, I've heard as early as this weekend, so we'll see.
John, do you believe that a trade will be in place before the draft occurs next week?
Definitely.
So, Griffin, because of Griffin and how competent he is and how shrewd he is, he'll have something in place. This trade will get done.
It will because, like I said, they're going to get some more draft picks in this draft. You figure they're going to have 2 in the top 5 for sure. Well, until they get that second draft pick, let's face it, there are 2 tiers of the top draft picks. The first tier is Zion, and then the second tier is everybody else. Well, nobody in that second tier is going to want to come work out for New Orleans knowing Zion's the pick. But all of a sudden now, if they have the 3rd pick, if they have the 4th pick, if they have the 5th pick, now they can bring in more prospects. They can do more medical histories. They can do more workouts to see who fits best with what Gentry wants to do. So, yeah, I expect a trade to happen probably, like I said, within a week for sure.
We're talking with John Marques of the Town Talk on the TownTalk.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. John, I know you bleed blue. You're a diehard Kentucky fan. And Anthony Davis, even though he may not have been the most – did not have the most dynamic personality, he became quite a huge figure in the city of New Orleans and for the state of Louisiana, known as a good guy. His reputation, though, is not that any longer. And do you think, as someone who follows the Kentucky program, knows it as well as you do, do you think this is something that bothers him whatsoever, or do you think he just doesn't care?
No, I think it bothers him a little bit. And the thing is, And I think Alvin Gentry hit it on the head that Anthony Davis is a good guy. He just got some bad advice and bad representation. You know, there was no reason if he wanted to be. And there's some, you know, have you read the Sports Illustrated profile of Rich Paul?
I have not yet.
You need to go read it. It's pretty interesting. And, you know, Rich Paul makes the claim that they went to the Pelicans several weeks before this and said, hey, we just want to let you know what we're going to plan on doing so y'all can do what, you know, so you can go make some contacts or whatever. And it was the Pelicans that basically essentially started leaking it to everybody that Anthony Davis wanted out. So that's what caused it to go public. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know. Take it for what it's worth. But I do think everything could have been handled differently on Anthony Davis's part. And I do think the Pelicans could have handled it a little bit differently as well. But long term, I don't think it's going to impact. I don't think it's going to impact him anyway, except, you know, he'll never be a beloved figure in New Orleans like he was 2 years ago. I mean, that ship has sailed now.
John, let's switch gears a little bit and get away from the Anthony Davis trade talks. I want your insight on the NBA Finals. Here we are, Game 6. The Toronto Raptors, and I'll say it again, the Toronto Raptors are one win away from winning the Larry O'Brien Trophy. They took a chance on Kawhi Leonard when they traded for him from San Antonio. Things did not end well for Leonard with him and the Spurs, and he's made all the difference in the world. If they win this world championship, he'll be the NBA Finals MVP for a second time. They took a chance on a guy possibly leaving after only 1 year. Are we going to see more of this? Because we see Boston with reports coming out that they're okay if they're just going to rent Anthony Davis for a year. Is this going to become more of the norm of these marquee players being traded in the last year of their deal, going, competing for a championship, and then leaving elsewhere?
You know, it's hard to say. You know, Anthony Davis definitely sets up as perhaps, you know, this year's Kawhi Leonard. You know, but it's also got to be in the right situation. You know, I can't say that Boston is as close right now as the Raptors were to, you know, breaking through. Now, look at all the dominoes that had to line up for the Raptors. You know, first of all, LeBron left the East. I mean, if LeBron had stayed in Cleveland, does anyone doubt that they probably would have gone back to the NBA Finals? I mean, because that's how weak the East has been. I think it just depends on the situation. Now, supposedly one of the teams that Anthony Davis has claimed that he wouldn't mind playing for are the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, say the Bucks make a trade and they pair the Greek Freak with Anthony Davis. You know, I could see them winning a championship next year. So, you know, I think it just has to be the perfect situation. And the Raptors had a good organization. They had a good team that they couldn't beat LeBron in the playoffs. Let's face it, that was the hurdle they had to get over. Well, LeBron left, that removed that hurdle, and they basically swapped, brought Leonard in for that. So, you know, I don't want to say this is going to become a trend just yet.
Talking with John Marques of the Town Talk on thetowntalk.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. John, I want to leave NBA and wrap it up with this. Both you and I were in Natchitoches this past weekend for the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. We're both voters. We both take part in this year in and year out. We talked about it on the show a couple weeks ago. You wrote a terrific column about one of our friends and mentors, Philip Timothy, receiving the Distinguished Service Award. But you wrote another column about Mr. Grass Eater himself, Mr. Special Handshake, the Mad Hatter, Les Miles. He had himself quite a good time all Hall of Fame weekend. Tell us a little bit about your column there about Les Miles and how he fully embraced going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame.
You know, he was, you know, you've been in the room the last couple of years. Nobody knew, should we vote for him, should we not? Is he going to, he says he wants to come back into coaching, but you know, we all thought he was done. So we finally elect him. And then, you know what, 4 or 5 weeks later, Kansas hires him to be their new football coach. And we're like, all right, well, how much is he going to actually want to do this? And, I mean, I'll be honest with you, after looking at how he interacted with everybody over the weekend, you almost wonder, like, does he really want to go back to Kansas and coach football now? Because, I mean, it was a love affair. And let's face it, when he left LSU as the football coach, it wasn't a love affair. You still had a good segment that loved him, and you had a good segment that couldn't wait to see him leave. And, you know, maybe this was a weekend to heal all the wounds that were there, because, I mean, you were there. You saw how he reacted. He had his entire family there. His wife fully embraced everything. I mean, it was a love affair for Les Miles. And
he thoroughly enjoyed talking about his time at LSU. It was not painful by any stretch of the imagination.
And did you notice his lapel pin throughout the weekend whenever he had a suit on or anything? It was a tiger.
It was a tiger.
It was Eye of the Tiger. It was Eye of the Tiger. It wasn't Kansas. It wasn't a Jayhawk. I was blown away by how much he embraced everything. My goodness, if you have not watched the induction ceremony when Cox Sports starts replaying it, you need to watch his segment because, I mean, oh, my gosh. I mean, I was almost in tears laughing at him because, you know, I thought he was hallucinating that Phil Fulmer was in the room. Well, it turns out Phil Fulmer was in the room. I could have seen,
was actually
I could have
in
seen
the room.
Les charging. I could have seen him charging Fulmer. And, you know, having a staring contest, you know, it was just wonderful to see him. And I think he was truly appreciative, maybe more than anybody could have ever expected.
He definitely was. And he definitely was one of the highlights. And you got to see him firsthand take part in the bowling, the bowling event in Alexandria on Friday as well. And he did that too, man. He put on the bowling shirt and everything. And then he came back up to Natchitoches. He was part of the press conference on Thursday. And Friday, obviously, we had Peyton Manning do his presser because he couldn't get into town until Friday. And who shows up for Peyton Manning's press conference? Les Miles, rocking his bowling shirt, just hanging out, having a good time, talking to people, taking pictures.
I mean, he was taking pictures with everybody. He was interacting, talking to them, signing autographs. You know, his wife, next thing I know, the Bank of Montgomery was the sponsor of the bowling event. And all their people had on these bright tie-dye shirts, and they say, I know Kathy Miles is wearing one as she, as a bowl. And I mean, it was just, I mean, I was shocked to see how much he enjoyed it. And like I said, it probably helped heal some of the wounds that were still there, the ones that he may have had, because when you're dismissed as the football coach of any major school mid-season, you just don't know how people are going to react to you. And let's face it, you Paul LSU football fans, they were probably happy to see him go. His time, he had probably worn out his time. But now that, he's come back, and one of the things I heard him say is when he's done coaching at Kansas, no matter how successful he is or whatever, I'm pretty sure I heard him say when they finally retire, it's going to be to Baton Rouge. So,
yeah, and that was stunning. He was definitely one of the stars of the weekend. Well, John, I appreciate you making time for us as always. Terrific work that you're doing there at the Town Talk. Congratulations on picking up a big award over the weekend for the LSWA banquet as well. Well deserved honor, my friend. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ray. I appreciate it.
John Marques, award-winning columnist for The Town Talk and thetowntalk.com, joining us, giving his thoughts on the Anthony Davis trade situation, as well as the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame weekend in Les Miles. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we will put a bow on the first hour of today's show, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. The St. Louis Blues end a 52-year championship drought as they claim the Stanley Cup by defeating the Boston Bruins. The baseball town is now a title town for professional hockey.
Let's say Boston, just your wish came true. They didn't win, so there you go.
That is. That makes me very happy. 4-1 win in Boston. And to tell you how fanatical the Blues fans were about this, the Cardinals were in Miami. So upwards of 45,000 fans filled Cardinals Stadium with an 18,000-plus down Clark Avenue back in St. Louis watching the game. They went worst to first. This was the worst team in the NHL on January 3rd right. of this year.
This season, yeah.
This season. They were the worst team in the NHL, and they turn it around, put together an 11-game winning streak in January and February, end up getting the 3 seed in the Central Division, get into the playoffs, and make the run all the way to the Stanley Cup. So congratulations to the St. Louis Blues for winning Lord Stanley's trophy. That'll do it for the first hour here of RP3 and Company. Coming up, we're going to lead off hour number two with a Louisiana wrap-up, college baseball edition, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now. Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana Wrap-Up.
For the second time this week, RP3 and Company takes you on the Louisiana Wrap-Up. Welcome back. Hour number two of RP3 and Company just underway shortly after 7 o'clock here on this Thursday. We're live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're on TV as well if you want to watch us there. KXKW, channel 32.1, 133, and 1133 in HD if you're on LUS Fiber. We've got that out of the way now, Raymond. We're going to fire up the old car here and start our trip around the boot in
time
the
out.
Capital.
Oh, okay. Time out. Right. You know, we're putting some miles on the car. Do we need to step it up and maybe go with a Winnebago? Since we're
like John Madden style.
Yes.
Like we're going to ride around. Okay, I like that.
Luxury
like,
bus, yeah, get some flat screens in there.
You know, fun fact, John Madden was, he's a huge wrestling fan, you know, WWF and all that. He was courted by Vince McMahon from WrestleMania, I believe it was WrestleMania 3, till like WrestleMania like 12, 13 or something. They were like a decade long that Vince McMahon wanted John Madden to come in and do color commentary on a WrestleMania. Just come in and do a guest spot and
boom,
call the show and all. Yeah, exactly. And John Madden wanted to do it, but because he's scared of airplanes and he had to drive his bus everywhere he went, they could never get it quite right. And John Madden always had to be somewhere else, and it could never work out fast enough where he could just fly in for that one day, do the show, and get out. And it's just a fun fact I learned listening to a podcast the other day. John Madden, huge wrestling fan, wanted to call a WrestleMania, but too scared to fly.
Wow.
So there's your fun fact for the day.
Yes.
And I'm not going to hit the button because I think that counts as sports still.
Yes, it does.
It does. So let's start the trip now. We decided we're in a giant RV now. We're driving. We're like Robin Williams. Rest in peace. And we're going to start in the capital city of Baton Rouge. What do you got, Ray?
Well, Antoine Duplantis, former Lafayette High star, picked up yet another award honor yesterday as he earned ABCA All-South Region honors. That's right, the LSU senior outfielder who was already had received All-SEC second team honors back in May. He picked up second team All-South Region honors from the American Baseball Coaches Association, better known as the ABCA. The four-year starter ended his collegiate career as LSU's all-time leader in hits, games played, at-bats, and triples. Duplantis was selected last week by the New York Mets in the 12th round of the Major League Baseball draft. He also leaves LSU as the number two all-time in NCAA history and career at-bats and number two on the SEC's all-time hits list. So another terrific honor for Duplantis, who, as a freshman, was All-Louisiana first-team honors, All-SEC freshman team, and freshman All-American honors from three different organizations. As a sophomore, more of the same College World Series All-Tournament team, SEC All-Tournament team. As a junior, SEC All-Tournament team, All-Louisiana first team, and U.S. Collegiate National team. So there's a lot of hardware. In the Duplantis household, I wonder if they just need to build a whole wing for their children's accomplishments in athletics. But
they probably should, but they seem like a humble bunch. They probably just pick their more favorite trophies to display, and then everything else gets put in storage, or I don't know where that. It's a good point. Where do they have like a specific shed for all their trophies?
I think they just need to have a rent house. Just put them all in there.
We don't have a pool house. We have a trophy house. That's what we have there.
But congratulations to the former Lafayette High Mighty Lion. I'm picking up yet another award honor.
You
for
said,
his baseball career.
You said it was a college baseball edition, Raymond. So I'm going to assume that as we take a drive back across the basin here to Lafayette, you're going to continue with something college baseball related. What is it?
And that's why you get paid the moderate bucks for that insight right there.
When did I get a raise?
Raging Cajun star, former Terling's Catholic standout, Hayden Cantrell. Leader of the Raging Cajuns, terrific player, great glove, and a very good hitter. He was named to the ABCA's Central All-Region team. He earned first-team honors. The Louisiana Raging Cajuns now have had at least one student-athlete named to an ABC region team in every season since 2013, the most recent being Colton Schmidt in 2018. The former Terling's Rebel started all 59 games this past season for the Raging Cajuns at shortstop, leading the team with a .930 OPS, 119 total bases, 56 runs scored, and 28 stolen bases. He also became the 10th player in program history to record three home runs in a single game back on March 16th against Little Rock. And then 2 days later, he hit for the cycle in a win over Northwestern State, become the fourth player in school history to do so. So congratulations to one of Acadiana's own and Raging Cajun star, Hayden Cantrell, for picking up some recognition.
When I was looking at that earlier, and when I saw those numbers, they jumped off the page at me. I didn't realize his stats were as good as they were. And anytime you can lead your conference in stolen bases, that shows something, I think, to major league teams when they see, because it's more than just speed being able to steal a base. So.
I agree. I'm also confused by the ABCA's
regions. No, I wasn't going to ask. I wasn't going to go there.
Because the
apparently the line of demarcation somewhere in the middle of the Atchafalaya Basin.
Because the Central All-Region team consists of Alabama, Louisiana, Lake Charles, Monroe, Louisiana.
How is it?
Lafayette, Louisiana. Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Well, wait. No, it doesn't. It can't.
It does.
But it can't.
It does.
But it can't.
Hammond, Louisiana. And New Orleans, Louisiana. But
what?
Not...
What?
The part of Baton Rouge where LSU...
Right. Right. But not that part of Baton Rouge. Because Antoine made the All-South region team, which apparently also consists of Baton Rouge.
That tells me the Coaches Association was like, everyone but LSU, you have to be over here with probably the rest of the SEC.
I don't get that.
I didn't say it was going to make sense.
No, you didn't.
I did not say it was going to make sense, my friend.
So let's just call a spade a spade. That's dumb, and we'll move on. Let's continue. We've got more stops to make on the Louisiana wrap-up. We're going to leave Lafayette now and head to the Big Easy. New Orleans, Raymond. What do you got? Baseball-related, please.
I will deliver.
Thank you.
You know. That's right. Privateers baseball.
The Fighting Blake Deans.
Reeves Martin. Now, Reeves Martin was the 2019 Southland Conference Relief Pitcher of the Year. Yesterday, he also was named to the Division I Central All-Region First Team as a relief pitcher. And he was named a first-team All-American by the NCBWA. So, another honor for one of the best relief pitchers in the state of Louisiana, regardless of what classification they play in. Reeves Martin is legit. Once again, Southland Conference pitcher, Southland Conference relief pitcher of the year, first-team All-Region team, and now first-team All-American for Reeves Martin out of UNO. So congratulations to the Privateer Star.
Rack up the accolades, young man. Got another stop to make, and it's similar. Actually, I'm lying. It's the exact same stop that we made at the start. So is it really a stop, or are we just returning back to the beginning? It doesn't matter. We're in Baton Rouge, Raymond. College baseball, please.
Texas Collegiate League action. You heard it in the two-minute drill. Brought to you by Cody Schutz.
Actually brought to you by Legends.
Brought to you by Legends, performed by Cody Schutz. The Cane Cutters, the Acadiana Cane Cutters, are our very own Texas Collegiate League team that plays at Faubacher Field. Well, they're on the road because they were taking on the Rougarou.
The Baton Rouge Rougarou in their lime green jerseys.
Yes. You know, we're going to have to catch a game. Both of them. We're going to have to go to the Cane Cutters home game and our Rougarou game. Because you live close to the Rougarou.
Yeah, I assume they play at, is it Memorial Stadium, I believe, or Memorial Field it's called, or something like that. It's right off of Fuqua Street in Baton Rouge.
We'll get our stats and research department right on that.
Hold on, let me turn my mic off.
But an interesting moment happened. Yes, the Cane Cutters lost the night, lost the game. But Drew Bianco.
I know that name.
LSU Tiger.
Right.
We talked about him yesterday, expecting big things from him, needing big things from him in 2020 for the LSU Tigers. Well, he faced off versus his former teammate, Will. How do you pronounce?
Rapol.
Is it just a Rapol?
Rapol.
Will Rapol, who's now playing for the Cane Cutters. He's put himself in the transfer portal. Well, they faced off last night, and Bianco got the best of his former teammate as he hit a three-run home run off of Rapol.
Into the trees
in the game, helping the Rougarou defeat the Cane Cutters in Texas Collegiate League action.
I'd like to point out the Texas Collegiate League uses wooden bats.
That is correct.
So this three-run bomb into the trees was hit with a wooden bat. Well done, Drew Bianco. I'm not going to be that guy, but I'll be that guy. Where was that?
Oh, there it is.
Where was that?
There it is.
I know. I'm not actually my man. That, but I had to say it. So, shout out, Drew Bianco.
Hey, you know what? Give me another one. Just
a random city?
Just park the RV, the Louisiana wrap-up RV, on the side of the road, because we got to give love to some others.
All right, we're going
to... And we don't have time to crisscross the state. We're just going to give them a shout-out.
Albuquerque, New Mexico. Then we're going to stop in Cody, Wyoming. After that, we'll go to Paris, Texas, Rome, Georgia. I believe there's an Athens, Georgia as well. Is there a Rome, Tennessee? Where is it?
Bastrop, Louisiana. Just throw it all out there.
And we'll finish off in Cutoff, where we'll end.
Want to give a shout-out, though, to all the other players from the state schools here in our great state of Louisiana that earned first-team All-Region honors for the Central Division, just like we had talked about. Reeves Martin from UNO, and as well as Hayden Cantrell from UL picking up those honors. But there were other guys throughout the state. So congratulations to Nate Fisbick, second baseman from McNeese State, receiving first-team honors. Chad Bell, third baseman from UL Monroe, for picking up first-team honors as well. Also a shout-out to Javian Williams, outfielder from the Southern Jaguars. He received recognition. Corey Gassoni from Southeastern Louisiana, a senior pitcher. He got some love as well. So congratulations to them for receiving first-team honors in the Central All-Region teams from the ABCA. They deserve some love as well. That's going to do it for this edition of the Louisiana Wrap-Up College Baseball Edition.
Gas is expensive in this thing.
That's why I told you to park.
You're right.
We're just doing a satellite phone.
Fair enough. Here, something else funny. Yesterday, and maybe we can dive more into this if we have a free moment somewhere, but I just want to leave it at this because I think it's funny. I signed up for, and I didn't do the draft. The draft was automated for everyone, but I am now currently a part of a Canadian football fantasy football league. That's a thing that happened. I don't know when the season starts. The draft was yesterday. But that's the thing. Go Team Maple Syrup.
Go Team Maple Syrup.
That's the team name.
Did our conversation with Kerry Joseph, CFL, Grey really, Cup it's winner?
Pretty ironic that it happened that way.
That happened on the same day.
Yeah, it's pretty ironic that it happened that way, yeah.
You're welcome.
You can probably guess it within three guesses who roped me into this, but they no longer work here. And his name is, it rhymes with Malin Feichel. If you're trying to figure out who I'm talking about, thanks, Al. Canadian football. We'll see. I drafted a bunch of Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
Over the weekend, I got to see the Grey Cup in person.
You know, you're doing better than me.
It's pretty awesome, dude. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, and can I also have a second here? Say screw you to all the talking heads out there still trying to bash U.S. National Women's Soccer. Y'all can all kick rocks.
My man's coming for you.
I'm still mad about that. Let them win. Stop it.
Well, we come back here on RP3 and Company. We're going to talk a little Houston Astros baseball. They lost last night, but, man, Justin Verlander was phenomenal. We'll dive into that right here on 103.7 The Game.
Now the pitch, and that is drilled deep to right center. Kiss it goodbye. Two-run home run for Moustakas off the rivet board and right center, and it's 5-3 Brewers.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. You want to give us a call? Feel free. ARCO Equipment Hotline 337-706-0111. We've talked about a litany of topics today. Focused mainly in the first hour on Anthony Davis trade drama situation. It is the epic 18-part miniseries that will never end. Once again, Anthony Davis makes his trade request via Rich Paul in January. And here we are in June with a week to go before the NBA draft, and the Lakers are once again the leaders in the clubhouse to get Anthony Davis? How did we get here? And who would have thought that? Kevin Durant injury plays a role in this as well. We talked about that, possible landing spots, Lakers, Celtics, what they would need to get in return. We're going to throw up a Twitter poll question for you guys as well. Where should, not where he will, but where should the Pels trade Anthony Davis to? The Lakers, the Celtics, or other? Those are your three options. Go to the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. Vote early, often. Right now, though, I want to talk a little Houston Astros baseball. Next segment, we'll have James Yasko on.
Ray, I don't want to be that guy, but I kind of got to be that guy right now.
Let me guess. Bumper to Bumper Sports already has that poll question.
Exact same one. It's the sink or swim question. I can tell you what the people think. There's 46 votes on it. If you like to know, it's the exact. It even has Lakers, Celtics, and other. It's literally the choices.
Great minds think alike.
That's not wrong.
And I'm gonna say that for me and Ben Love.
Yeah. It's fine.
Not the world famous. Okay. All right, so
61% say the Lakers so far. So if you want to, you can go vote on that if you haven't already.
Yes, you can go vote on the Swink or Swim question for Bumper to Bumper Sports with the good brother Ben Love.
Got 9 hours.
But
left.
We will throw up our own Twitter poll question: will Anthony Davis be traded by draft night?
There it is.
There it is.
There's the one we're looking for.
Omaha.
Exactly.
Just called the audible.
Exactly.
So will Anthony Davis be traded before next week's NBA draft? That's your poll question. Pretty simple. Yes or no. Go vote on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. Thank you, Cody Schutz, for being the producer extraordinaire, making sure that we didn't send out the same damn poll question as our afternoon show.
No one would have noticed, right? No.
No, absolutely not. Look, the Astros lost last night 6-3. They were unable to sweep the Brew Crew, Milwaukee. But they remain first in the American League West. They're still 46-23 overall. Here's a few things, and we'll get more into this with our next guest coming up at 7:32, James Yasko from the Lima Time Podcast, is this. Best record through 68 games in Astros history. 46-22. That was the Astros record before last night. That's the best record through 68 games in Astros history. The previous best was 45-23 back in 2017 when they won the World Series. Also, even though the Astros lost last night 6-3.
Yeah, no thanks. Dang it. Gotta beat the Brewers. Gotta beat the Brewers.
They don't get the sweep of the Brewers, but they still take 2 of 3. Verlander pitched 7 innings. He struck out a career high 15 batters. Career high. His previous career high was 14. He surpassed that with 15 Ks and only 7 innings of work. He only gave up 3 runs on 4 hits, no walks, struck out 15 in 7 innings. He got the job done. He is the leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, when it comes to the American League Cy Young Award. Let's just be honest right now. I know it's only June, but this guy is freaking phenomenal this season. The Astros bullpen, though, they got a little shaky. In extra innings, it was Colonel Perez who gave up 3 runs on 4 hits. He got tagged with a loss in 2 innings of work. So are there concerns about the back end of the Astros pitching staff? They've had some blown saves here. They've had some blown opportunities where the bullpen has given up leads. Yeah, are there any concerns here with one of the best teams in the American League?
No.
I'd say no, but what happens if you get into a series in the playoffs and your bullpen blows 2 games? That could be the difference of you winning that series or losing it. And we've seen really great Major League Baseball teams get bounced from the postseason because of blown saves.
Right. I mean, it's another one of those things to where just to, like, you got to try to not let the game. And this thing goes for any team, for any game. But you can't let the game go 14 innings.
Right.
That's where the Astros got hurt last night.
So the longer you let it go, right, because you only have so many arms.
And I know when it works both ways, I understand that, but something's got to give at a certain point. And last night, it fell the Brewers' way.
Right. I mean, the Brewers played 3 runs in the 14th inning. Well, hell. Your starting pitching did their job. You did.
It was
your
a Mike Moustakas 2-run home run as well that jolted that 3-run inning. So
correct. And how many nights are you going to have Bregman? This is how respected Alex Bregman is. He only recorded 2 at-bats in the box score and not 6. You want to know why? Because he was walked 4 times.
Barry Bonds.
That's getting Barry Bonds level type of walks. That part of that's plate discipline. The other part is that pitchers are afraid to pitch to him. We'll talk all about Astros, Alex Bregman, Justin Verlander, the bullpen, the hot starts of the season with our next guest, James Yasko, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Russell Sumo cast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Right now, it's time for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is the co-host of the wildly popular, #1 rated Astros podcast, Lima Time Time. It's the one and only, our good friend, James Yasko. James, good morning to you, brother. How are you?
Hey, not too bad. How you doing?
Doing well, doing well. So let's get right to it. I know the Astros lost last night in extra innings and 14 innings. And that kind of just nullified a tremendous, just beautiful pitching performance by Justin Verlander. But this is still probably the best team in the American League. They're still atop the American League West standings. They have the best record in their history through before yesterday's game. That was the best record in Astros history through that many games, topping the 2017 team that ended up winning the World Series. James, my first question to you is, can the Stros, even with everything that they've had going on, having Altuve on IL, Springer on IL, Correa on IL, can this team keep up this toward historic pace for the franchise?
I think they can. And, you know, one of the things that's important to remember about that 2017 team is that their injuries came a little bit later in the season. It was about now, a couple of years ago, that the Astros had essentially 80% of their rotation, you know, on the what was then what used to be known as the disabled list. And it was Mike Fiers who freaking carried the rotation through it. And so, you know, I guess the difference if we're playing the on pace game with the 2017 team is that, yeah, because the 2017 team fell off a little bit because of injuries starting now, and the Astros this year's team just has their injuries a little bit earlier in the season. So as they get those guys back, you know, I do think they'll end up with a better record than the 2017 team for sure.
James, why do you think this team, in spite of the injuries that they've had to their roster, because let's be honest for a minute, 20 other teams in Major League Baseball, if they lost a former league MVP in the heart and soul of their team and they lost two other position players, if they lost three of their best four hitters, they'd be hovering around 500 right now. That's just the reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet this Astros team, and I know that there's a lot of reasons for it, but yet this Astro team just finds a way to win games over and over again despite not being fully healthy. It's amazing to watch. Is it, for us here, is it amazing to watch for you, a diehard Astros fan, to see your team perform at this high level despite not being fully healthy?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know how many teams have three legitimate MVP candidates on their, you know, in their lineup, and then to have them all hurt at the same time and still, you know, have the record that the Astros do, it's pretty incredible. I think the key behind it is that loss in the ALCS last year. You know, I think that you know, they won the World Series in 2017, you know, made it to the League Championship Series last year and got shut down. They had four really bad days in a row, and I think that, I mean, it just pissed them off. And so I think that the depth that the organization has built combined with sort of this drive, I think they realize that there's something special, you know, that could be building this year, next year, perhaps even the year after. And I think that's sort of in the back of people's mind, in the back of their mind. And there's just not that many teams that are actually trying to win the World Series this year. So I think that the Astros window is wide open, and it's open wider than most teams.
We're talking with James Yasko. He's the co-host of the Lima Time podcast here in the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, we've talked about him before, and I'm just going to keep doing it because Alex Bregman is playing at an MVP level, and you know that your star player, your young star player on your team, has the respect throughout the league of them considering him as an MVP candidate when he gets the Barry Bonds treatment. Last night, he went 0-for-2, but he was walked four times. Is it? I know part of it is his plate discipline. He makes the pitchers work for it. I get that. But I'm seeing a lot more pitchers just kind of concede the at-bat and go, well, you know what, we're just not going to throw anything even remotely near the plate. Hopefully he'll chase something, and if he doesn't, we'll just put him on base. We don't care.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a pretty smart strategy because, you know, you take the bat out of his hands and you make the guy behind him do something with it. And the guy, you know, you force the rest of the lineup to produce rather than just let yourself get beat by one guy. So it's a smart strategy. I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon. But, I mean, once he gets that protection in the lineup back, you know, basically from the injured list, you know, he's going to get more pitches to hit because, I mean, the pitchers just have to pick their poison at that point.
James, why do you think Bregman's a smaller guy? And I heard his name get brought up during the Major League Baseball draft where they talked about the kid out of Cal being drafted so high and some other guys being drafted in the top 10 and the top 20 prospects that are a little bit on the smaller side, 6 foot, 6 foot one, not huge bulking guys. that can still hit for power. But I kept hearing Bregman's name being brought up as an example of, hey, they don't have to be 6'3", 6'4", 235-pound guys to hit home runs and get extra base hits. Is Bregman kind of breaking that kind of mold a little bit? I know you already have Altuve, who displays power, and he's, you know, a smaller guy. But Bregman, it almost seems like they're making him into a model, if you understand what I'm saying, where it's like, hey, this is a guy that can hit for power, but he's on the smaller side. Maybe we should take more flyers and look at drafting more guys built like Alex Bregman compared to the old kind of size sluggers like a Bryce Harper.
Yeah, no, I think that's true, and I think that with smaller guys, you have shorter, more compact swings, and as pitching staff evolve to focus on spin rates and as velocity creeps up higher and higher, if you have a super long swing, then chances are, you know, unless you are timing it absolutely perfectly, you know, you're going to end up walking back to the dugout. And I think that Bregman has helped sort of, I think teams have sort of reevaluated the tools and the skill set that you need in order to be successful in the league. I don't think Bregman is, for lack of a better term, I don't think he's the Jackie Robinson of drafting smaller players. But I do think he's played a role in sort of opening some eyes across the league.
We're talking with James Yasko of the Lehman Time podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, I want to talk about Alvarez. He made history hitting two home runs in his first two games. He's a sensational young prospect, 21-year-old out of Cuba, native. You know, look, he's displayed this power before he got called up. He hit 23 home runs in the Pacific Coast League in only 56 games. He's bringing that power to the big leagues. How impressed? I know it's early, and I know A.J. Hinch is going to kind of make sure everyone says, hey, you know, expectations, you kind of need to reduce those. He's very high on the young man. Alvarez, how much better can this Astros team be with him now being called up and giving them yet just another power bat in that lineup?
I'm not sure what the team can do with him, but I'm pretty excited to see what it could be. Him hitting two home runs in his first two games, you know, that was absolutely – and the second one I think was more impressive than the first. I mean, you know, okay, you hit a home run against the Orioles. He was playing against a team constructed similarly to the Orioles every day at AAA. I mean, the Orioles are basically a AAA team. And then to hit one – The way that it, basically he hit a line drive home run with a bailout swing, like that was absolutely insane. So if you throw him, you don't want to hit him. I mean, once Springer and Altuve and Correa come back, you know, I don't think Alvarez is going to be hitting fourth or fifth. But to have that power, you know, with the on base guys in front of him like Bregman, Correa, Brantley, you know, to be able to just sort of flick your wrists and drop it 350 feet away like that. It's sort of a game changer. I mean, for a team that's enjoyed a lot of production from the bottom third of the lineup, it's about to get more stacks.
Do you feel like I know it's early and he hits the two home runs and we know that, but you mentioned it and I'm curious for you to further elaborate on that, James, about where you're going to put him in the lineup. Is this someone that they're going to call up and let him get some reps, and then they may just keep him? He may not be an everyday starter for the Stros, but they're definitely going to keep him in there, get him reps, pinch hitting, maybe come in, you know, come in there in the later of games. Because, I mean, they're so stacked, right, from top of the lineup down, that this is just kind of lagniappe, as we like to say here in Louisiana. It's just bonus. But do you feel like A.J. Hinch will make sure there's a spot for the young man moving forward?
I don't think he was brought up, you know, as a stopgap. And I don't really have much to base that on, other than you don't call up a 21-year-old kid to come up and just sit, you know, and maybe get, you know, 15 at bats a week. I think basically what it is it's a job interview for Tyler White, you know, that it puts Tyler White on notice, and everyone laughs at Tyler. I love Tyler White. He had a really good year, you know, or a really good week in 2016, and he's been a serviceable hitter, but he's not getting it done. Now, what's lucky for him is that he's not getting it done on a team where pretty much everybody else is. So I think, you know, when it comes time to make a decision, who goes to AAA? You know, do you pick Jordan Alvarez or do you pick Tyler White? And, you know, I still think White has time to turn it around, and I still think that he can make the Astros make a decision. I mean, Alvarez can get sent back to AAA, no problem. If White gets optioned to AAA, he has to go through waivers first, and you lose him potentially forever. I mean, every other team could use Tyler White. But I think it's definitely every game should be seen as a competition between those two for who stays throughout the year.
James, one last question before we let you go, brother. Justin Verlander, he does not get the decision last night. The bullpen, which has had a few minor issues, especially in these extra inning games where they've had some of the guys give up some leads. If that's the only issue that this team has, I think they're good to go moving forward, because I think that'll fix itself with more reps as the season progresses. But Verlander, career high 15 strikeouts. How in the hell is this guy having his best season as a pro at his age right now? I mean, he's the leader in the clubhouse for the American League Cy Young Award. He just last night struck out more batters in a game than he's ever had in his entire career, and that includes already winning a Cy Young and an MVP award. How is this guy doing it, man?
Yeah, he's Tom Brady. I don't know. I tried my Boston accent there. I think getting traded to Houston gave Verlander sort of a breath of fresh air. You know, I think that Verlander's a Hall of Famer. There's really no way around that. But I think that when Verlander got traded to Houston, I mean, you look at the direction the Tigers were heading in 2017, to be able to come to Houston, win a World Series, you know, have potentially an even better team in 2018 and an even better team in 2019. It's sort of given him, he sort of realizes the opportunity that's in Houston. And I think that has made a pretty massive impact on how he, not that he was, I don't think he's a guy that would ever mail in a start. But when you realize, like every start, like this is, you know, a chance to make history, you know, it sort of changes your outlook a little bit. I wish he wouldn't get, you know, the run support of like 2004, 2005 Roger Clemens, but no, every start, every JV start is a plan altering occurrence. Like you change plans based around when Verlander starts.
James, appreciate your time as always, man. Enjoy the rest of your week. Have a sensational weekend, and we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Hey, sounds good. Thanks.
It's James Yasko, co-host of Lima Time podcast, breaking down all things Astros for us as he does every week. Reminder, Astros are off tonight, but they'll be back on our airwaves, 103.7 The Game, tomorrow night as they welcome on the Toronto Blue Jays for a series. So you can catch them live and local right here for the entire weekend starting tomorrow. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we will wrap up hour number two with some news out of the SWAC. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Some news came out yesterday concerning the SWAC, which, of course, is the Conference of Grambling State in Southern University. Corey Diaz from the New Star reported, SWAC's presidents and chancellor's council voted at the conference's annual spring meetings to permanently reinstate the football title game and to keep it played on campus of the highest-seeded team. This was expected, but now it is official. Now, they used to do a rotation. I actually attended a SWAC championship game between the Southern Jaguars and the Alcorn State Braves there in Houston at NRG It was a tremendous atmosphere and a pretty damn good game as well. Now, they went to this formula of they wanted to try it out on having it at the highest seeded team between the two division winners. They liked it. The attendance was good. It also helped save costs for the SWAC conference, not having to worry about renting out a place in Houston or New Orleans or wherever it might be. So the fact that they decided to make this permanent to reinstate the football championship game between the two divisions is great news for the SWAC conference. And to keep it on campus of the highest seeded team is also a cost-saving measure for the conference. That's smart. So if Grambling and Southern win their division and they're the higher seeded team between them and the East Division, then they'll be able to host the SWAC championship game either there in Mumford Stadium in Baton Rouge or up there in Grambling. So good news coming out of the SWAC conference yesterday concerning their football conference championship game. Cody Schutz.
Yep.
We gave the people not one, but two poll questions yesterday on the show.
Correct.
It got some fire. It got some traffic.
It did.
Good reaction from the people, the listeners of Acadiana. Those polls are now closed, yes?
Yeah, they are.
Let's give the people what the polls were, what the options were, and what the results are.
We asked you, who should the Saints lock up next, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, or Marshawn Lattimore? A very nice 69% say that Michael Thomas should be the next one signed by the Saints. We got a response here from Richie James, and he agrees. He says it should be, though, Lattimore. He's in the only 7% category, but he says Lattimore, assuming he bounces back from a sophomore slump. He claims wide receivers and running backs, they're pretty easy to find, and they're largely dependent on the skill of the quarterback and other players.
Ooh.
Elite-level man coverage cornerbacks are not easy to find. So Richie James in the minority there, but giving his reasoning, I can live
and
with that.
And the Saints are going to see if he can bounce back.
Right.
They
and
give
we,
him
also,
contract extension.
We also asked, should the Saints sign South African rugby player Tristan Blewett to a contract? 54 votes, and it's basically split down the middle. 56% say yes, 44 say no.
Nice. Nice. We'll talk more about Saints minicamp as well as Anthony Davis trade drama with our next guest, Les East from Crescent City Sports. He'll join us to start off hour number three right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parts III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on, see that it says New Orleans on the front of it. I mean, it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to hour number three of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We led off today's show talking about Anthony Davis trade drama, and apparently how he is headed to the Los Angeles Lakers. That's right. I know. You're waking up. You're going, Raymond, is it January? Late January? No. It's June. It's solid. We're solid in the month of June. Yet here we are. A strange trip it truly has been. Anthony Davis, will he be traded in between now and next week's NBA draft? We ask you, the listener, to vote, go on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account and vote in our latest poll. Will Anthony Davis be traded before next week's draft? Yes or no? Very simple, straightforward. We'll ask that question plus much, much more involving the Anthony Davis situation as well as New Orleans Saints minicamp with our next guest as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. He is an award-winning writer, columnist for CrescentCitySports.com. It's the one and only, our good friend, Les East. Les, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, Raymond. I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Let's start off just with Anthony Davis. He makes the trade request via SI, now SI cover boy, Rich Paul. Back in January, it causes essentially a bomb to go off inside the Pelicans organization and that team, as well the collateral damage affected the Los Angeles Lakers. People were fired, people quit, the whole nine yards. And I never thought we'd see a time where the Lakers could still get Anthony Davis, but yet here we are, and multiple media reports are coming out that the Lakers are one of two teams that are the front runners to get Anthony Davis. It may take some finagling. It may take a third team to get involved here to give enough assets back to the Pels. But how did we get here, and how surreal is it that Anthony Davis may be traded to the Los Angeles Lakers before next week's draft?
Well, it is a little bit strange because there's been so much drama back and forth with the Lakers and the Pelicans, and of course, I think you used a good term there with collateral damage. The Pelicans leaking all of the names of players that the Lakers had discussed prior to the February trade deadline really upset a lot of the young players on the Lakers, that they were being shopped around, and that really disrupted their locker room and destroyed whatever chance they might have had of sneaking into the playoffs. So it has been a roller coaster ride, especially as it relates to the Lakers and the Pelicans. A lot of bad blood between the two organizations. Because the Rich Paul and the Lakers tried so hard to manipulate the Pelicans into trading Davis to the Lakers back in February. But I've felt all along, and especially since David Griffin was hired by the Pelicans, that none of that mattered. He was going to put together whatever the best deal was for the Pelicans. I think ultimately that will include at least three teams. It wouldn't shock me if there were a fourth team involved, just because this is going to be a blockbuster trade. This is going to be one of the biggest trades of a young star in NBA history. And the Pelicans are going to expect a lot of assets, and I think there are enough teams interested that there's going to be a lot of leverage that's going to drive the price up. And so it may well take three or four teams to get the deal completed. And ultimately, Davis is going to wind up, I think, wherever the best deal for the Pelicans takes him. And perhaps that will wind up being the Lakers. I don't think David Griffin cares at all about where Anthony Davis winds up. He just wants to make the best deal for his team. And if the Lakers and other partners can make that happen, I think that's fine with David Griffin.
We're talking with Les East from CrescentCitySports.com. He covers New Orleans Saints, New Orleans Pelicans. He's joining us here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, I want to talk about the two teams that a lot of chatter is coming in about. And it's the Lakers and the Celtics, and they've been the two teams mentioned the most ever since this began. Reports have the Lakers deal is they want to give the Pels Lonzo Ball. They want to give them Brandon Ingram and the number four overall pick. That's obviously not going to be enough. A sticking point that reports have is Kyle Kuzma, that the Pels would like to have Kyle Kuzma. I also think that the Pels probably should ask for the Lakers' next year pick as well. And then you go to the Celtics, it's the same situation. Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, the number 14 pick, that's not really all that coveted. It's a mid-round pick outside of the lottery, or right there on the fringes of the lottery. So is a third team going to have to be involved here to make this happen, or can one of these teams throw in trade for another player before they trade with the Pels? How do you think? You've covered the league long enough. What do you think is going to have to happen, here?
Well, I think probably the only team that could potentially put together a package where it's just them and the Pelicans would be the Celtics. They have a lot of assets in terms of young players and high draft picks. Not so much this year, but also in coming years. So they're the only ones I think who conceivably could make it work one-on-one. I think more likely, even if the Celtics are involved, that it's probably going to take a third team. I don't see how the Lakers can put together a package that's going to make it work without another team. In fact, they offered basically the whole roster back in February, and Dell Demps was making the decision back then, and he wasn't satisfied with what they had to offer, and that's why they missed the playoffs. They had the longest playoff drought in the history of the franchise because they've not drafted very well of late. So Brandon Ingram is a guy who's developed pretty well. He would be a good asset. Kuzma, I think, would almost have to be part of a deal if the Lakers are going to make the package work. Lonzo Ball, I don't know that he's ever going to be an elite player, so that I don't think that's going to excite anybody to a significant degree. So I just don't see the Lakers putting together a package on their own that's going to entice the Pelicans to make the trade. So I think definitely they're going to have to get another partner involved who can move at least one other major asset to the Pelicans. And I think that probably would be the case even with the Celtics.
Talking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, you know, the focus has been young players, guys in their mid to early 20s in draft picks. And that's pretty much been the narrative for most of this whole Anthony Davis trade drama. But now here we are. We're about a week out from the draft. They're going to need a third team involved. Why couldn't one of these teams get involved and trade for a veteran player, an all-star caliber player, say like a Kevin Love, and fold him into a deal where, I'm just using him as an example, where he's the other player that the Pels get, that they get picks, they get a couple of young guys, but then they get an established star already as part of the thing. Because right now, even if, like you said, the Lakers or the Celtics say, hey, we give you Tatum and Smart in the number 14 overall pick and then a pick next year, that's still not equal value for Anthony Davis, and the Lakers can't do it either. But if you throw in someone like a Kevin Love or a veteran all-star caliber kind of player with another team, that would be as close as you probably are going to get with equal value, right?
Yeah, I think it's a veteran player is certainly a possibility. It comes down to just how much time does that player have as an all-star caliber player, because this whole thing is being done within the context of building a championship program around Zion Williamson, who's 18 years old. So the Pelicans aren't going to win the NBA championship next year, but they have a chance to be a championship contender for years to come with young players who evolve over the next 2, 3, 4 years. And I don't think they're going to be real excited about a veteran who maybe helps them learn to win on the front end, but isn't going to be it's going to be past their prime when they get ready to compete for a championship. So I think it still has to be a relatively young veteran who maybe completes the puzzle. You know, somebody like Kevin Love, I know you just kind of pulled him out of the air as an example. I think he might be someone who's a little too far along in his career to be of significant value. But I think a relatively young all-star caliber player certainly could be a part of the puzzle.
I'm talking with Les East here from CrescentCitySports.com on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. There's been another team that I find to be interesting. And when it comes to these trades, and including the third team, it's always a wild card, right, Les, traditionally speaking? It's always a team that comes out of left field. What about someone like the Portland Trailblazers? I know they reached the Western Conference Finals, but could they be, you know, one of those teams that's a playoff team in the mix, a Portland, a Utah, you know, someone like that, that has some assets, that has some guys that are more established, maybe younger versions of Kevin Love or just younger players? Are those the kind of teams that the Celtics and the Lakers are going to kind of lean on to try to get this three-team trade done with the Pels?
Sure. I think anybody is on the table. Portland is certainly a team that has a lot of talent, including a lot of young talent. They made a significant step last season after being upset by the Pelicans in the first round 2 years ago. You know, this season that we just finished, at least with the finals ending in the next few days, they made a good run to the Western Conference Finals. They did get swept by Golden State, but they may be encouraged that they're headed in the right direction with the cast they have, and they may not be looking to change that significantly. But, you know, the right deal always changes people's thinking in that regard. So I think almost anybody who has assets in terms of lottery picks or young stars is potentially a player in this mix. You know, anybody in those top four picks, you know, the Knicks, I think, are still potential players in this. Memphis could be, if they choose to be. I think they probably want to stay with that second pick. But if they were to put the second pick in this year's draft and in the mix, certainly that makes them a player. So I think when this is all said and done, in one way or another, David Griffin will have talked to most of the teams in the NBA, either directly or indirectly. So almost anybody, I think, is a potential player in this.
Talking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, real quick on AD before we head over to Saints. Will he be dealt, traded, by next week's NBA draft?
I think that's probably going to happen. I think it's in everybody's best interest, especially the Pelicans, to get this done before the draft. And I think we're on the clock now. I think it could happen any time. It could happen as soon as today, but I would certainly expect that it will get done by the time Zion Williamson holds up that Pelicans number one jersey next Thursday.
Les, let's switch over to Saints. Mini camp is wrapping up this week. You've been out there covering it like you always do. What's kind of stood out from you during these mini camp sessions so far this week?
Well, the first thing you notice is that when Drew Brees isn't there, everything changes. And he missed some OTA time, and he wasn't at the practice Tuesday, which was open to the public because he was testifying at that trial in San Diego that he and his wife had brought against the jeweler. And, you know, there was a decent-sized crowd out there. There was a slightly bigger crowd yesterday, but usually at these practices, training camp, or mini camp, when Brees and the first team offense go out there against the first team defense for full team drills, there's just a buzz that goes across the practice field from the crowd because they want to see Drew and Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas go against the first team defense, and everything picks up. That didn't happen Tuesday. And Teddy Bridgewater had a very good practice. All the quarterbacks had a good practice, including Taysom Hill and JT Barrett on Tuesday. But the crowd just, there was never that buzz because number nine wasn't out there leading the team. There was much more enthusiasm yesterday when Drew returned and was out there with the first team offense. You noticed that right away. And it changes even at practice when Brees isn't out there. Other than that, you know, there's just not a whole lot you can tell. I think we've talked about this before. Certainly with the linemen, you can't tell anything when they're not in pads. You know, you look to see who's catching the ball, who's running good routes, who's defending well in the passing game. But I don't think we've seen anything these last couple of days that enlightens us about where this team is headed. It should be a very good team that competes for the NFC Championship once again, assuming they're able to keep all their principals healthy.
Les, appreciate the insight. Appreciate you making time for us. And once again, brother, congratulations on being named Columnist of the Year by the LSWA over the weekend. Keep up the terrific work, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks, Raymond. I appreciate it.
Les East. CrescentCitySports.com, breaking down Anthony Davis, Pels, trade situation, as well as touching on Saints minicamp for us there. We got to hit a break. More RP3 and Company coming up after this right here on 103.7 The Game.
Absolutely. You know, he got in last night, shot me a text. He had a good practice. You know, he's someone that's obviously going to work extremely hard on what we're doing. You know, they'll have times during this summer where these guys will get together and throw. But it was good to have him back out there today.
That's Saints head coach Sean Payton talking about the arrival of Drew Brees for minicamp. Back in the fold yesterday, he was talking to reporters. Drew took part in minicamp down there in Metairie yesterday. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Minicamp will be wrapping up this week. Another session will be held today down there at the training facility in Metairie. And as Les indicated, you know, it's a totally different animal when Drew's not there as it was earlier this week. There's a different feel to it. You know, he definitely brings a level of a certain amount of electricity to the facilities, especially with the fans, because they want to see number nine out there. He is the face of the franchise. But even with Drew out there or not out there, there's been some interesting matchups so far during minicamp. And one of them that caught the attention of Sean Payton was his new big-time free agent acquisition, the tight end, Jared Cook, who they poached away from the Oakland Raiders. They're hoping that he can help give them a real pass-catching threat at that position. They haven't had that in, let's be honest, more than a few years. Cook lined up against lined up opposite of Michael Thomas and has been doing that during minicamp. And Sean Payton talked about having those two great pass-catching threats lining up together on the field at the same time.
Typically, the X receiver where Mike plays, not always, but typically it's opposite the tight end. So it just, you know, if the coverage rolls to Mike, then it's advantageous or, you know, there's some good looks over there to the tight end side. So, you know, we'll put him in some different spots. He's someone that has a unique skill set, and so you can flex him out at receiver, play him closer to the ball. It really depends on what we're trying to do.
Having a legit pass catcher like that in Jared Cook is going to give them so much more flexibility in that offense, and that'll help prevent the double teams that have been occurring on Michael Thomas last year, even though that didn't stop can't guard Mike from just being an absolute beast. Another person that's turning some heads there in camp is Patrick Robinson. Remember, he was with originally the Saints, a first-round draft pick. He left in free agency, went with Philadelphia, won a Super Bowl ring. He came back. He was supposed to be the starting corner. He's supposed to be the number two corner last year for the Saints, but he got injured, missed the whole year. They had to trade for Eli Apple, bring him in. Robinson is now back healthy. He's been looking good during this mini camp. This is what Sean Payton had to say about Patrick Robinson.
He's someone that is smart. He's played really well in the slot. He had a play today that was impressive. So, yeah, it's another addition, really, to our roster based on the injury.
He'll essentially be your nickel corner. He'll get a lot of reps out there. And then Payton had this to say, you know, their first draft pick this year was in the second round. He had a first-round grade. The young man, the center, out of Texas A&M, a lot of people are high on him, think he's a plug-and-play guy to fill the role left by the retirement of one of their stars across the offensive line. This is what Sean Payton had to say about Eric McCoy, the young man out of Texas A&M.
He's doing well. He's part of, you know, there's three guys working there. We'll continue to do that in training camp. It's hard to evaluate some of these positions without the pads on, but yeah, so he was taking a lot of the reps with the ones today. He's doing good.
So once again, it's mini camp, but it's necessary. It's part of the offseason process. But some good things. Patrick Robinson being healthy is going to help the Saints. Jared Cook being healthy, lining up there, is going to help the Saints as well. So some good news coming out of minicamp down there in Metairie for the New Orleans Saints. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, NBA Finals Game 6, we're going to preview it. right here on 103.7 The Game.
Our medical staff, his own opinion, second opinion doctor outside of our organization. And Kevin checked all the boxes, and he was cleared to play by everybody involved. Now, would we go back and do it over again? Damn right. But that's easy to say after the results. When we gathered all the information, our feeling was the worst thing that could happen would be a re-injury of the calf. And that was the advice and the information that we had. And at that point, once Kevin was cleared to play, he was comfortable with that. We were comfortable with that. So the Achilles came as a complete shock. And, I don't know what else to add to that other than had we known that this was a possibility, that this was even in the realm of possibility, there's no way we ever would have allowed Kevin to come back.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. That was Steve Kerr, the three-time world championship head coach of the Golden State Warriors, talking about the devastating injury that occurred to Kevin Durant. He elaborated a little bit there about, the original injury that he occurred that made him miss more than a month of the postseason was a calf injury. Doctors cleared him. His medical team cleared Kevin Durant to play. Kevin wanted to play. He got everything. Everything was lined up. Everybody signed off on him returning to play there in Game 5. Their backs were against the wall. They needed KD, a two-time NBA Finals MVP. And he was sensational. 3-for-3 from three-point land. Double-digit points. And then he tried to cross up someone, and you saw the slow-mo, and it looked like a little cherry bomb went off in his leg. Ruptured his Achilles. He's already had surgery. That happened yesterday. He will likely miss all of next season, the regular season, and a big if, because those Achilles injuries are difficult to come back from. Kobe Bryant, Dominique Wilkins are some of the bigger names that have had it, and even his teammate Boogie Cousins himself is coming off of it. It's a slow recovery time, even for the most top-level athletes in the world. So where do we go from here? Do the Warriors have any regrets having KD out there? Look, we can play devil's, we can look back and go, well, hey, this is how this is going to work. Oh, they shouldn't have played him and everything. Look, they needed Kevin Durant. If KD doesn't play in Game 5 and give them that spark and just light up the Raptors like he did, they don't win that game. That gave them the boost. And when he went down and got injured, they played a determined brand of basketball that we haven't seen from the Golden State Warriors in this entire NBA Finals. But they sure could use Kevin Durant tonight, Game 6. In Oakland, Raptors still lead the series 3-2. They just need to win one of the final two games. Tonight's game, either tonight's game, Game 6, or Game 7 back in Toronto. The Raptors have already won two games in Oakland, in Oracle, which will be demolished, or simply the Golden State Warriors will move out of it after this season. I want to say they go into their new digs there in San Francisco next year. It was an ugly scene the other night. I'd expect the crowd to be a little bit hostile towards the Raptors. It can get loud there in Oracle to begin with. You're in Oakland. They don't play around. But the way the Raptors fans, some of the Raptors fans reacted to Durant's injury the other night and the fact that they were cheering on an injury. Even the Raptors players were sickened by it, and they got on to their own fans about it. But if you don't think that had a positive impact on the Golden State Warriors, well, this is what former league MVP and one of the best three-point shooters of all time had to say, Steph Curry, about how the Raptors fans treated Kevin Durant and his teammates in Game 5.
I think in terms of being in the finals 5 years in a row and being on the stage, it's hard to avoid those interactions with fans that want to kind of make their imprint on the series somehow, some way, especially with social media these days. So I think it's kind of stupid, to be honest, in terms of people camping outside our hotel just to yell expletives at either us or our family members or whatever the case is. But we handle all that stuff with class and try to ignore it the best we can.
He didn't even mention there the actual interaction on the thing. He was talking about some of the other reports that came out about fans being unruly at the team hotel. Just because you root for a team, just because you pay the admission price to get into an event, does not mean that you have to act like a moron.
Here's a great example of this, and I like when this...
I just don't understand it, man.
I like when this happens for me because this is where pro wrestling shines in situations like this. Granted, if you follow wrestling closely, you'll know within the last month, there have been two separate incidents where fans have gone too far, have pushed it, where whether it's making physical contact with the wrestler, one person actually spit on a wrestler at an event, and these are the people that are getting in trouble. The point when you say when you buy your ticket and you pay your admission, especially when you're talking about wrestling, half of the fun is the interaction, booing the bad guys, cheering the good guys, telling the you know people that are telling you you suck, yelling back at them. That's half the fun of it.
Correct.
And that goes for, especially, I would say, the NBA Finals. I mean, you're so up close to the action. There's no railing or fence or netting between you
and
the players. I mean, you're right there.
It's the most intimate pro sport experience of any of the big sports, right?
Yeah, that's
because you're right there by the action.
There's nothing in between you and what's going on the court. And I think you have to know nothing should ever cross that line of what's happening directly in front of you. If you keep, and this goes for wrestling, basketball, anything, if you keep your cheers or jeers directly related to what's happening in front of you, the game itself, then I would say almost 99 times out of 100, you're going to be good. You're going to be fine. If you know, hey, you can't shoot tonight, you suck, this, that, all that, that's fine. That's no problem. It's when you start taking things past what's happening in front of you and you start talking about, like, Steph related to someone's family or someone's maybe struggles that are sort of public off the field or off the court, outside the ring. When you start bringing up things that don't have anything to do with what's happening right in that moment, then that's when you start flirting with crossing that line. And when you completely cross that line is when you decide that your cheers or jeers or whatever they are, they're not even for you or they're not to help your team. They're just so you can get a little bit of attention. And that's when things really become a problem, when you're like, oh, wait a minute.
It's your ego.
Yeah, I've been noticed now. What can I do? How can I get my 15 minutes of fame? And it's really not that fine of a line, if you ask me. Some people say, oh, it's where is that line? Where can you stop?
You know where the line is at.
It's not that hard to find.
It's one thing when we go to Saints games, my wife gets very animated. She loves banging on the back of the Superdome wall. She loves the seats, the cheap seats that are right against the metal wall, and she loves banging on that bad boy, okay? And she cheers. But we went to a game not that long ago, a couple of seasons back, when the Bills came to town, and there were some Saints fans in there berating the Bills fans, cursing at them, just berating them the whole time. Had nothing to do with what was going on the field. My first thought process is this. You realize these people are spending money in your local economy, first of all. Okay, so dummy. Second of all, act like you got some, like you were raised with any resemblance of any type of class. You can cheer on your team. When your team gets an interception and picks off their quarterback, cheer. That's right. And when your team does something bad and the other opposing team does something good, you can boo them. That's allowed. That's right. But don't talk about people's mamas or grandmas or their sisters. Don't make jokes about that, you know, their sexual orientation. Don't do any, like, just don't spit on them. Don't curse at them, the other fans or the players in this case when it comes with the NBA. Just don't. It's a privilege to be able, you're privileged enough to be able to afford to be able to take part in this game. To say, hey, I was there for game 5 of the NBA Finals. No, there's only so many people that can say they did that, right? So why are you going to ruin it? Like, why are you going to ruin it because you may get a couple of likes on social media, or you may be, you know, you can be shown over and over again being the idiot in the stands the other night that pointed to Kevin Durant that he was holding his leg in pain on the floor and going, yeah, that's great, awesome. You want to be that dude? For real. Like, just people are stupid.
I don't subscribe to the idea that it's a fine line to walk there. I just don't like.
I agree with you.
And then the players exist, and again, in any sport, the players exist in a different bubble than the fans when it comes to trash talk. And it comes, I have a problem with, fans, getting overzealous and the whole camping out outside the hotel, and that's all that is ridiculous. I don't feel like this is a double standard. I don't have a problem with guys like Draymond Green cup checking guys here and there in the game, or Lance Stevenson blowing into LeBron's ear, or Rajon Rondo tugging on guys' shorts as they run down the court. Those things I don't have a problem with because these are
competitor versus competitor.
Yeah, that's different than the fan versus fan. Because if people will sit there, and I've seen this argument before. Well, don't tell the fans not to get in other fans' faces when the dugout's clear during a baseball game. BS. That's got nothing to do with you. The base is being cleared.
The fan.
Yes.
You are not the person on the field. No matter how many jerseys you may buy that has your favorite player's name across the back, you are not that person. Right. No matter how much you wish you could be, you're not that guy. You are a fan. You sit in the stands in a comfy seat, hopefully. A comfy seat. Right. You pay overpriced for adult beverages or souvenir cup sodas and nachos and hot dogs or whatever else you do. You're not the player, man. Like, you're just not.
And
the game play in front of you.
And if you can't control what the players do, another great example, the U.S. women's soccer team. They celebrated every goal they scored in that gigantic World Cup win. All 13 of them got celebrated. I do not have a problem with that because they are on the field. They are competing. If you as a fan, and I don't recall seeing any stories about any kind of altercations between fans after that World Cup game, which is a good thing. But if you're a fan that is upset and, oh, I can't believe my team is acting like this, that if that does bother you, then go find a new team. Because, you can't control what your – if you don't like what your team is doing, then maybe they're not your team. That's all. And
maybe they shouldn't be your team.
And maybe that's what I'm saying. If you don't like the way USA celebrated the soccer game, or if you don't like the way that, the Raptors – and the Raptors didn't, but let's say hypothetically the Raptors, all the players clapped when Kevin Durant got hurt, not the fans. But if that hypothetically would have happened and you're a Raptors fan, you were allowed to be pissed at the Raptors and you wouldn't want to follow that team anymore. The same goes with soccer. Stop complaining about it, and if you don't like the way they celebrate it, then don't watch.
I agree. My man's still fired up about the...
It keeps coming back.
It keeps seeping back into the show.
Until they play again Sunday and probably only win by like a couple of goals and people drop it, this will be a thing. Actually, you know what? On Sunday, I hope they win 21-0. USA all the way, baby.
We got to hit a break, but when we come back, we will put a bow on this Thursday edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also, simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, as well as LUS Fiber 133 and 1133. That's in high definition. want to thank today's guest, John Marques from the Town Talk, from thetowntalk.com, breaking down Anthony Davis trade talk as well as the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Thanks to James Yasko, co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast, giving us his insight on the surging Houston Astros. Whew, they may be the best team in baseball. And, of course, Les East from CrescentCitySports.com, giving us his thoughts on the Anthony Davis trade drama as well as some Saints minicamp news.
Speaking of Anthony Davis trade drama,
let's give an update on the poll question.
Well done, because as I spoke that sentence, I said trade drama, and this stuff jumped in my throat, and I needed to cough, so I appreciate you jumping in there so I could turn my mic off.
We're a team, brother.
No one would have ever known if it not for me bringing it up. We did tweet out, though, this poll question for you about an hour or so ago, and we want to know if you think Anthony Davis will be traded before the NBA draft. 36 votes so far. Pretty good take early on in this poll. 89%, Ray. 89% say yeah.
I tend to agree with that.
Yeah. That's.
I would expect it to be done this weekend.
Just one of those,
and it probably can't
Twitter.
Be made official until maybe draft night, but I think you're going to see our New Orleans reporters be all over this. I think it's going to break over the weekend. I think they're going to have a deal in place.
Oh, this would be one of those Friday news dump things.
Could be a Friday news dump or Saturday afternoon, evening. I think it's going to occur over the weekend. I think the trade will be in place by Monday, if I had to guess.
If this trade happens, I think I agree with what Les said. You know, regardless of what the trade is, the Pelicans probably aren't going to win the NBA championship next year.
No.
But this trade, plus the addition of Zion Williamson, it's got to be, I think, playoffs or bust, though.
There's always turnover. So, I mean, depending on how else the rest of the teams do. But you can see with Zion, Drew Holiday, and depending on who they get back in this trade, and if they get another young player or something like that, you know, just Zion and Drew alone, that's going to help you.
Yeah.
They could be, you know, depending on what players they get back, I could see them being a playoff team. Yeah, now they may be a 7 seed or an 8 seed.
And that's where I think the expectations are going in after the draft, and we'll see where Anthony Davis ends up and how that works out. But I think the projected expectations for this team with the number one draft pick is probably a 7th or 8th seed and make the playoffs.
Right. And at least have, you know, at least have some growth, right? That's the whole thing that they're wanting to see. Programming reminder. Jordy Holberg Show with Uncle Jordy from 2 to 4 today. Then the good brother, Ben Love. No Astros today, so you're going to get the full 3 hours of Ben Love. Bumper to Bumper Sports is going to be live from the tap room at River Ranch. That's a terrific time. They have great drink specials. It's always a good crowd to come out there and see Ben do his show live from the tap room at River Ranch. So make sure to check that out. Listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. Or you could always go out there and hang out with Ben. He'd be more than happy to have you join him. Also, reminder, Ben will be live from Rufino's on the River tomorrow from 4 to 6:35. He's going to lead you into Astro launch pregame at 6:35 because the Astros will begin that series with the Toronto Blue Jays there at Minute Maid Park. Also, a tad bit, an interesting bit of information. I'm not the biggest hockey fan, neither are you, Cody. Congratulations once again to the St. Louis Blues for winning. Here's some interesting information, courtesy of Rich Eisen via the world-famous CD on the Twitter. 2010, Blackhawks win their first cup in 49 years. 2011, Bruins win their first cup in 39 years. 2012, the Los Angeles Kings win their first ever cup, 44-year wait. 2018, the Washington Capitals win their first ever cup, 43-year wait. And now this year, 2019, Blues win their first ever cup, 51-year wait. So that's
obviously rigged.
So it's just not all the traditional powers winning these Stanley Cups.
Quack, quack, quack,
quack. Oh, there it quack. Is. There it is. Y'all have a great day out there. Be safe. Sport of Politics up next right here on 103.7 The Game.